Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. This is episode 9, featuring round 16. Round 16 features 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games. Friday night was the fun of it. We had 3 games that were just fantastic. Let's kick it right off. The first of those games was New Zealand's Breakers, 10-12, going up against Melbourne, 14-8 in New Zealand. And Melbourne won this one by 20. It was an absolute spanking. You look at that scoring breakdown, it was actually just Melbourne across the board, but their second quarter was the biggest. They outscored New Zealand 13-29. Top performers for Melbourne were Chris Golding with 24 points, 69% from the field, 3 rebounds, 5 assists. He was shooting it from everywhere. Josh Boone really had a stat line that he normally has, but I think I felt it was more impactful in this game, considering it was up against Sean Long. He had 14 points, 63% from the field, 11 rebounds, 3 of them are offensive, 4 assists and a block. DJ Kennedy was back in form, doing a bit of everything. Again, showing how in modern basketball, that wing spot, if you can do a bit of rebounding, a bit of defense and a bit of playmaking, you're just so useful. 13 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists and a block. Dave Barlow put in a lot of points in this one. 23 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 5 of 7 from downtown. Sean Long was the only one who really stood up for New Zealand with 15 points, 5 rebounds. Looking at the team stat discrepancies, 3-point field goals. When you sit in a zone, and like New Zealand do, you're going to concede 3-point shots. You know, you're going to give up little penetration and kick. And as a result, New Zealand shot 8 of 29 from 3-point land, 27%, whereas Melbourne were 13 of 25 for 52%. So 5 more threes on almost double the percentage. It's just not going to look good. And then the assists as well. So New Zealand had 13 for the game, Melbourne 26, plus 13, double the assist. And it was just a simple matter of Casper Ware, Golding to an extent, Mitch McCarron, getting their guy, taking a couple of dribbles, beating off the dribble and going. You know, it wasn't, there was a couple of nice little passages where the balls went through a number of hands, but other than that, it was just driving kicks. And then the next stat was blocks. New Zealand had 2, Melbourne had 6. You know, that's the Josh Boone effect. He's that good down there. He's such a big body. You know, Sean Long is a big guy. Josh Boone's bigger. Josh Boone looks so big across the shoulders, even standing next to Sean Long. I watched this game. I loved this game of basketball, this day of basketball. Friday night, I got home, I put my mattress on the lounge room floor, you know, I set up a little tent. It was like telethon all over again. So here I've got key points. Chris Golding, just he shot this game out of contention. He went crazy in the second quarter, hitting a bunch of threes, and then carried it on into the third. He's great off the bench. He might not be happy with it. I think he gave an interview earlier in the week saying that you know, obviously every basketball player doesn't really want to come off the bench, but I think it's his best fit and certainly the best fit in this team going forward. Melbourne just seemed to exploit every single zone that New Zealand, every single defense that New Zealand threw at them. 2-3 zone, 1-2-1-1, even a bit of man, I thought at times, man-to-man defense, and Melbourne were just prepared for all of it, especially the arrow zone, the 1-2-1-1. And the 3-2 and things like that, or the, it just, whatever defense they played, Melbourne were finding gaps. The other thing was, I felt in this game, Josh Boone put such pressure on the offensive rebounds that it really slowed New Zealand. The last game I really remember them being super quick, and they always put up a lot of points, but the one I saw them in the flesh was when they played Sydney, I think in round 12, and they are pretty good at getting it off the backboard and pushing the ball, and Josh Boone just being that bigger body, always having to make sure that their quick athletic bigs, Wesley and Long, have to hang back to get them, just slows them down a ton, and it was really palpable, and I think it really contributed to the win for Melbourne. It was a murder is what I've got written here. I just think with zones and full court pressure and traps, they're good for a change of speed and a change of game and an injection of energy and aggression. But if you sit in them for too long, pros at this level will absolutely destroy them, and that's what happened in this one. Boone was ready for this game, if I can just quickly add that. I've got that in my notes. He wanted to go at Sean Long, and I think, honestly, he got the better of it. So that was that one. Let's move on to the next game of the round, which was Brisbane at home versus Sydney. Brisbane, 12-11, plays Sydney, 14-9. Sydney came away with a squeaker. The scoring was pretty even through all the quarters, except the second quarter in which Sydney went up 17-25. So plus 8 in that quarter, and then followed that straight up with going down 7 in quarter 2, 31-24. They scored 7 points less. And then 19 each in the fourth quarter for a two-point win for Sydney. Top performers. I mean, I just thought Sydney played really, really tough. They got a little lucky in the fourth quarter. I thought Brisbane had their chances and missed. But the top performers, you had Lish with 15 points on 50% shooting, two assists. Jerome Randle was a bit everywhere. 14 points, 50% from the field, 7 assists, rebounds. He had a good game in this one, but even better later on. Newley was really good in this game, especially early, catching the ball on the move and making things happen for 14 points, 60% shooting, 5 assists, 4 rebounds. And that's kind of his stat line, Newley. You know, mid to high teens in scoring, 5-5 at a high percentage. That if he can do that, Sydney's an immeasurably better team than third place. You know, they look really good. Bogut, 7 points, 37%. Not great, but 12 rebounds. 3 of them offensive, an assist and 3 blocks. Had foul trouble in this game as well. Brian Bowen, you know, sometimes when Sydney really needs something from him, he actually steps up pretty big. And again, referring to that game against New Zealand where he had 12 points in the fourth quarter. He had 13 points in this game, 66% from the field, 2 rebounds. Came in and just smashed 2 threes the moment he got in. For Brisbane, it was all Cam Bairstow, 22 points, 58% from the field, 4 rebounds. Had 18 of those points in the first half. And I think Shane Heal was calling for it in the game. And Besto's done this a little bit throughout the season. Big point tallies in the first and second quarters, and then kind of goes missing in the third and fourth. And this was certainly one of them, you know, to score 18 or 22 in the first half and then 4 points. Word was he was cramping, but, you know, you can't be cramping in the NBL. And then Tarangi, 11 points, 4 rebounds, 66% from the field, hit 3 of 5 threes and had that beautiful stroke of his going in this game. Underperformers, I keep saying this every time I do a big Brisbane game. Cam Glidden in the first half, he was 0 of 2. He got two shots in the first half. And I tried to isolate what the problem was, and I really couldn't tell. Like, Brisbane seemed to run a very equal opportunity offense, but, you know, they haven't got anyone who's particularly ball dominant. Patterson likes to put it on the ground, but, you know, he's a willing passer. I just don't know how they don't get Glidden going, and the answer is Lish just shuts him down every time. He finished with 17 points for the game and came on in a bit of a flurry and showed how dangerous he can be. He really pulled them back into this game and set them up for the win, but, you know, you got to do it throughout the game, not just later on. Patterson had a bit of an off game, 12 points, 31% from the field, but did grab 10 rebounds and 6 assists. And I felt was really feeling the burden of this offense, especially as Kadee and Glidden weren't going. Speaking of Kadee, 6 points, 40%, 5 assists in 24 minutes. You know, really, they're like bench numbers. If you saw a guy on the bench score 6 points and throw out 5 assists in half a game, you'd be like, okay, that's a good performance off the bench. This is their starting point guard. He's a good player. He just hasn't played up to it. And then Gibson, as I was saying before, I think Brisbane really got a bit unlucky. He missed 2 open threes in the last 3 minutes and then got taken off. If he hits those, this is a very different game for Sydney. You'll have to go back and watch it. Team stats discrepancies. The game was so close there weren't many, but turnovers. Brisbane had 10 and Sydney had 6. So, you know, 4 turnovers, they go back for 8 points. You know, they can make all the difference. And then bench points. Brisbane only 29, Sydney 37, so plus 8. That helps, you know. Bogut went out with a few fouls and had to sit a bit more. I think he only played about 25, 26 minutes, which is only 26 minutes. He's normally up around the 30s. So they gave him a good spell, and it was, you know, Bowen coming in with those points that really buoyed Sydney. So looking at the eye test, Sydney got Brad Newley the ball on the move. He's not a triple threat player. He looks better when his first dribble is on the move. So, you know, when he comes off a pick, he wants to be catching that ball and straight away putting it on the floor, which is fraught with peril if there's a defender in front of him. But, you know, he's a smart enough player not to do that. But when he catches it on the move, cutting, moving, his attack on the basket this might sound like hyperbole, but I think he's the best. He's got the best around the basket game in the NBL. He can flip it up. He can go over. He goes under. He can reverse layup. He's got his strength at the hoop is really impressive, and especially in this game. As I said before, Cam Glidden, 0 of 2 in the first half. Lish just locked him up, but that's not good enough. You know, you can't just throw your hands up and go, oh, well, you know, he beat me defensively. That's it. Brisbane and Lamanis have got to work out a way to get their, you know, arguably their best or second best player going. Patterson was threatening to take this game over. I think he was trying to get guys going a little too much, had to look for his own shot. And when he started doing it, I mean, he made two really good scores to tie this game up at 90-90 late in the fourth. And he was really getting a step on Brad Newley. You could see where he was kind of sandbagging the first three quarters maybe. And then when it was sort of game time, he stepped up. Tarangi was overeager on a three-point attempt at the 31-second mark. The score was 93-95. They were down 2 points. It ended up being sort of the one of the last plays of the game, and caught it off a little pick. Seemed to think he had daylight, and I actually forget who was the defender who, I think it was David Ware, who recovered and put pressure on the shot. And it wasn't tipped, it wasn't tipped, it wasn't touched. It was just a genuine air ball where Tarangi got rushed and airballed. Down the end, we saw how, I'll just quickly say, the NBL is doing its votes for MVP, defensive player, and so on and so forth. This play at the end of this game really showed who the defensive player of the year is, and it's Andrew Bogut. The way he intimidated Cam Bairstow out of the final shot, because that was a pretty decent look. Patterson had made his way into the middle past Newley, made a little pass off to the right-hand side of the keyway, and Bairstow had a good little pop shot, little sort of runnery floater at it, and it put it long. And, you know, if he put it short, or if it kind of rimmed out or didn't come off the backboard right, that would suggest to me that he's taken the shot and just missed it, just a skill error. But the fact that he put it long meant that he was putting a little bit of extra something underneath it to get it over Bogut and overcompensated. So that play, if I was voting for Defensive Player of the Year, that's the one I'd show guys to make the right decision. Another point I've got here is Brisbane just didn't do well enough defensively on Randle. And it's not just a matter of, like, you know, this is what bothers me in a lot of commentaries, because, like, oh, they've got to show greater effort, got to show greater effort. You can show the best effort in the world, but if you're not doing the right strategy, it's not going to work. And I think for them, too often they were allowed to, Bogut would come up and set a high pick for Randle, and Randle would come off to his right, which is the preferred side, and then they would straight away switch, and he'd be operating on a bigger guy, a slower guy, and he'd make too much happen. And he made it happen for himself and his teammates with the 7 assists. They need to do what Adelaide did a couple of rounds ago to Bryce Cotton, and that is show hedge or double off that pick. Take it out of Jerome Randall's hands. I think Lamanis has got too much respect for Bogut's offensive game. Let him dump it off to Bogut. What's Bogut going to do, shoot the three? You're going to put it on the deck and go all the way to the rack? I don't think that's really his game. I felt it was a real mistake from Lamanis. You know, Jerome Randle is the guy that makes this Sydney Kings team go. Bogut may be the most valuable, but Randle is still the most impactful. Slight little distinction there, but you just watch every time. Pick, switch. And not even a hard switch. The big guy was steps back, and so too often he was orchestrating on Hodgson, Bairstow, or someone else. But anyway, Sydney got the win, 95-93. Brisbane will get their chance at them later in the round, but that worked out even worse. Let's keep going. Next game. And so all these three games came on the one night. So you kind of got greased in with the New Zealand-Melbourne game. You know, that was just a bit of fun, a lot of threes. I was giggling watching Chris Goulding smacking threes. Yeah, then you had the Sydney game, Brisbane. That was a hard-fought contest. Your heart was pounding down the end. And then you had Perth at Illawarra, which was a good finish because it started at a bit later, felt a bit more adult. The Perth crowd is always wild and fun. And Perth got up on this one, 104-90. Illawarra, I thought, really, for a team that's, you know, outside the playoffs, they always give a very good effort. They're always pretty smart and pretty clever and play pretty tough and well. But unfortunately, I think they were a bit intimidated by the Perth crowd. Perth got out to a great start, 36 points to 27 in the first quarter, and just kind of keep going from there. If that quarter doesn't happen, this would have been a really tight game. Also, Illawarra kind of dropped the bundle in the fourth quarter as well, just couldn't put the ball in the hole. They only scored 15 points in that fourth quarter to 22. Top performers for Perth, as always, Bryce Cotton. Shot 38% from the field, a little bit deceiving. 5.7 assists. 7 assists is the big one. It was making so much happen. The big stat for me was he shot 11 free throws and made 10 of them. So I don't know if a lot of those field goal attempts were him throwing it at the hoop. Had a 4-point play in this game. And people were saying, oh, he flicks his legs like Reggie Miller. He doesn't flick his legs like Reggie Miller. He just jumps really high on the jump shot. NBL guys have... defenders have got to work it out. Like, you need to give him space to land. When you jump to contest his shot, you got to be moving with him. You got to be either going up and out. You can't be going up and in and get under his floor space. Anyway, happens all the time. Tarico White, 26 points, 52% from the field, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. Nick Kay was amazing, 17 points, 46% from the field, 11 rebounds, 9 of which were offensive. 5 assists. He almost had double-digit offensive rebounds. It's crazy. Clint Steindl, 13 points, 45% from the field. Clint Steindl's now on a nice little roll of, I think, maybe 3 or 4 games where he's starting to get his shot off and Perth look schmick. Illawarra, Brian Conklin, 20 points, 52% from the field, 8 rebounds, 5 of which were offensive. Again, the guy was just making it happen, especially in the fourth. I think he got most of his points in the fourth quarter. He seemed to be the only one capable of putting in the hole. And then Jordan Jett was nice with 19 points, 61% from the field. Underperformers in this game, I mean, Todd Blanchfield just couldn't get going. 9 points, 37%, 6 assists, which was nice. 1 turnover in 26 minutes. Had 2 bad turnovers late in the fourth where he came off a dribble. And the first one he was fouled, and the second one not so much. Team stat discrepancies, so, you know, there's a lot here. Perth were plus 17 in free throw attempts, plus 5 in steals. Illawarra were plus 9 in turnovers. They had 16 to Perth 7. Second chance points as a result of all those offensive rebounds, pretty obvious. 23 to 7, plus 16 to Perth. Offensive rebounds were 17 to 9 in Perth's favor. And then points in the paint was the only thing that really kept Illawarra alive. They had 50 to 26. Plus 24 to Illawarra. With the Wildcats, we always do the Tom Herz Wildcat Index. He wrote a wonderful article a couple of weeks ago that really outlined how the Wildcats play well. And here is his thing. His blueprint for success for the Wildcats. So they need to have a nice start in the first quarter, and they did in this one, 36 to 27. His idea was to start Mitch Norton. That's not possible anymore. He's out with a... it's not hamstring, it's a quad strain, I think. No, I don't know the muscles very well. Anyway, so he's out for the season, but, you know, I think they got a lot out of Tarico White early on instead, so that's a tick. Offensive rebound, 17 to 9, that's a tick. Getting Angus Brandt going, a bit iffy, depends which way you want to look at it. He had 7 points, 8 rebounds, 4 of which were offensive, and 6 free throw attempts, which is always, I think, the best measure of Angus Brandt. Is he being effective? Is he getting fouled? Is he going at the hoop? And, you know, 6 free throw attempts is pretty good. So let's call that a tentative tick. The bench, though, if we include Clint Steindl, last time I didn't include Steindl, if we look at the whole bench, 22 points, 7 of 14 from the field, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 turnovers, all belonging to Tom Jervis, 3 steals a block in 42 minutes. In his article, Tommy Herz was mainly referring to Jesse Wagstaff, who in this game had 3 points and 2 assists. The bench was good. Like, when Steindl's a part of that group and shooting well, they're really nice. So, tick there as well. Free throws, as I said before, 25 of 29 as opposed to 10 of 12, so that's a tick. Turnovers, they only had 7, that's a tick. And then as far as people just standing around watching Bryce Cotton, definitely not the case. Tarico White was active and actually got a couple of his scores in off the dribble, making things happen late in shot clocks. He was better. So the Wildcats look really good coming into the late of the season. They were looking patchy for a while. I think that was to do with their long schedule during the Hotman Cup. But they look good. And when Bryce Cotton is not the only guy on the floor scoring for them, they look good. And again, I did the same thing about Bryce Cotton. I said the same thing about Bryce Cotton, the defense by Illawarra on him is the same thing as Randall. Again, too comfortable letting him come off picks and decide what he's going to do with a switch defender who's not capable. Often it was Brian Conklin. Can't do it. You got to find a way to make the defense a little bit more in your favor. You know, it's an offensive game. The offensive team has the ball. They can control their fortune. You can't really do that as the defense. You're at the mercy of the offense, but you can take a couple of steps and to secure some sort of orchestration on the defensive end. You know, as and it may not be a good strategy that works every time, but at least it's something to take that little bit away from the offense. And if you let Bryce Cotton come off pick and rolls and do what he wants, that's not, in my opinion, the best strategy to win basketball games in the NBL. But that was at Perth winning that game. Let's move on to the next game of the round, which I sadly actually didn't watch this game, if I can be totally honest with you. It was Cairns, 14, they haven't won 14 games. Cairns, 4 wins, 19 losses versus Adelaide, 12-12. Adelaide came out smoking, 31-19 in the first quarter, but then Cairns leveled it up, or brought it pretty close too, with a 27-17 scoring second quarter. And then Adelaide went up by 10 again in the third quarter, 21-31 scoring, and then that was kind of it. End score, Cairns 91, Adelaide 100. Top performers, really for Adelaide, it was Daniel Johnson. As I said, didn't watch this game, I just sort of looked at the stats and the highlights. The guy had 24 points on 56% from the field, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. I think the story of this game is he didn't have to go up against Nate Jawai, who had 13 minutes, 6 points, 3 rebounds, and was complaining of knee tightness, and as a result missed the game later in the round that we'll talk about. And then Melo Trimble kind of had a bit of a game that came back to earth, and I feel bad about saying, oh, he kind of came back to earth a little bit with a stat line like this, but 21 points, 35%. 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 turnovers, 6 fouls. You know, it's not really fair to say, oh, he had a bit of an off game. That's a very good game by NBL standards. Huge usage rate, but that's the Cairns Taipans this year. It's his team. He does what he wants. Back into the winner's circle. Jack McVeigh, 10 points, 14 minutes, 50%, 2 rebounds, 1 assist. Not the most glaring stat line, but the kid just seems to get 10 points from just pure heart and hustle every game, or since he's got minutes with their import Ramon Moore out. So. And then a little bit of an underdog story with Fabian Krasilovic. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Fabian. 11 points, 7 rebounds in the absence of Nate Jawa. And really, that's it. I'm not going to go into this too much. Cairns lost by 9 to Adelaide. It's not much more to say, really. Next game. Now, this game I got something to say about. Sydney, 15-9, played Brisbane, 12-12. Sydney got out to a huge run to start this game, 34-18 in the first quarter, and then kind of petered along, nicely at that pace. Brisbane had Brisbane didn't win a single quarter. The closest they came was within 4, actually within, though they did win a quarter, how embarrassing. They did win the fourth quarter, 30-28. The end score, Sydney 107, Brisbane 91. Top performers for Sydney, Jerome Randall. He was smoking. 26 points, 66% from the field, 2 assists. Kevin Lish, 21 points, 63% from the field, 3 assists, 5 steals. I've got that underlined. I know I'm circling it. Brad Newley was, I thought he was good in the last game. He was even better in this one. I mean, a bit of a bandwagon. You know, everyone was playing well in this one, so I was kind of jump on board. He had 14 points, 60% shooting, 5 rebounds, 6 assists. That's his stat line. Newley does that and they win. I'm going to try and sit down this week and look at games in which he's had a similar stat line, where he's been a little bit of their sort of third or fourth highest scorer and done a few things in between the margins, and see what their record is when Newley plays well. Because I know it's their record is bad when he plays poorly, because when they went on that bad losing streak a couple of rounds ago, his numbers were down. Andrew Bogut was better in this one. 13 points, 35% from the field. And I sound like I'm making excuses for the guy, but I think a lot of those were when he was getting taps at offensive rebounds and as a result getting field goal attempts, when really it's not like that. 12 rebounds, 8 of which were offensive. 3 assists, 0 blocks. I didn't actually get the chance to look at it, but this might be the first time he hasn't got a block in an NBL game. I don't know. He seems to have been pretty good. Honourable mention for Sydney is Daniel Kickett with 11 points. And Ray Turner, I thought, was much better in this game. He was a little bit more relaxed. Had one bad play where he went over the top of Mika Vekona. I had a long chat about that on Twitter with Shane Heal and a bunch of others. I don't really want to go into it too much, but, you know, Ray Turner, the play before, Bogut had gone over the back of Mika Vekona, who'd pump-faked and faked a shot, and Bogut went right over the top. And then I think maybe even the next play down, Ray Turner had subbed in for Bogut and then went over the top of Mika again on the same sort of play. And, you know, I'm not saying it was dirty, but Mika is there. Ray Turner's way up in the air. As he can feel Ray Turner on his back, Mika is raising his shoulders, bucking him off. He's not looking at the hoop. He's not trying to shoot it. It's not a shooting motion. He was throwing a guy off his back. He was not going up to shoot it. There was no attempt to shoot it because it doesn't even leave his hands. He's got two hands on the ball. One hand isn't under it. One hand's not hooking it up at the hoop. It is literally a guy's on my back and I'm going to throw him off over. Now, I don't know if he meant to throw him off over to just kind of get him off cleanly or what have you, but, you know, Ray Turner took exception to it. And, you know, a lot of people are saying Ray Turner looks silly. I happen to think that Ray Turner, he's the guy who went over the top. He kind of knew what he was feeling, and he felt like it was a bit dirty and kind of went after Mika a little bit. Nothing happened, no tech or unsportsmanlike or even a scuffle, but I don't know. I'm going to say this, and this might, I don't want to sound like I'm bad-talking Mika Vekona, but I have a hard time giving the benefit of doubt to guys who play basketball who can't shoot, score, pass, dribble. You know, oh, you can pass actually, but you know what I mean? Guys who are out there for defense and toughness don't get the benefit of the doubt in my book because, you know, they're not an entertaining player. Anyway, I've said too much, but you know what I mean. Mika Vekona is out there for toughness, he's not out there for flair, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I don't give him the benefit of the doubt. Moving on, Patterson was good for Brisbane, one of the few bright spots. He had 27 points, 58% from the field, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 turnovers. Cam Bairstow, 16 points, 53% from the field, 7 rebounds. And when he was on David Ware or Kickett, looked really good. If they're going to win this game or they come up against Sydney again in the playoffs or what have you, he's got to look at that matchup and say, instead of saying, oh, I'm going to get 18 or 16 or 20, he's got to look at that matchup and say, I'm going to get 40. And that's how Brisbane are going to win. Luke Kendall didn't get into the last game, got into this game. 14 points, 33% from the field, 8 of 9 free throws, 5 rebounds. I thought he was good. I mean, he certainly looked more like I actually noticed him in the game as opposed to Jason Kidd, who again, in this game, had 5 points, 20% from the field, 1 of 5, 1 assist. Cam Glidden, again, he must be thinking about Lish in his sleep. Tossing and turning, 4 points, 20% from the field, 1 of 5 again. And then Tarangi, 0 points, 0 of 2, 1 rebound. And these guys all played 20 minutes plus. Brutal, brutal game for them. I mean, Sydney just shot the sheesh out of the ball and forced turnovers and ran. I didn't even bother doing the team stat discrepancies because they just killed them. One thing, other than just saying, oh, you know, Sydney did this and that, I thought Brisbane, this is a really weak showing. They needed one of these two games against Sydney this round, and they didn't get either. Not even the one close to the one at home, but, you know, okay, you lost a tough game, and, you know, you didn't get a few breaks late in the fourth, but to then throw up a goose egg like this, I just thought it was a bad one. Steve Carfino, a personal favourite of the NBL Pocket Podcast, said a very interesting thing. He said, you know, when Bogut's catching it at the high post, almost at the three-point line at the very top, he's got a paddock. He's got the whole thing to himself. And he was saying that there has to be pass pressure on Andrew Bogut when he makes that catch. And I think, do it. Get someone on him up in his face. Because what's he going to do? Is he going to put it on the floor and kill you off the dribble? I don't think so. I mean, what it might do is actually force him to get down the low post, which is where I want him anyway. But most definitely, you can't just let him catch it and survey the floor and hold it above his head, take a dribble, take a think about it, and then make a backdoor pass to Kevin Lish or Newley for a layup. Get some pass pressure on there. Kendall made things happen as opposed to Kadee, so maybe look to give him a little bit more minutes.
but that's really about it. Sydney just shot the lights out and played great defense. And looking at this game, I mean, they looked as good as Melbourne did this round. You know, Melbourne had a huge win against New Zealand, but this is even more impressive. You know, a big win against a good opposition in Brisbane, who are fighting for their life, and Sydney totally snuffed them. In this game, the first game was a bit more competitive, but even still, I felt like Sydney looked a lot better. And I got to hand it to David Ware, who had a couple of big threes in that first one. So anyway, Sydney win that one against Brisbane. Next game was Melbourne versus New Zealand Breakers. I actually didn't watch all of this game either. I just watched the last of the fourth quarter in OT. New Zealand jumped out to a nice little first quarter, scoring 29 points to Melbourne's 21. Melbourne came back in the second quarter, 25-16. Then went up in the third. At one point, Melbourne had a 12-point lead in this game before it was tied up at the end of the game. New Zealand, 28 points to 16 of Melbourne's in the fourth. So they came back big. And in OT, Melbourne really showed some class. They really put this one to bed. In the overtime, Melbourne scored 15 points to New Zealand 6 for an end score of Melbourne 111, New Zealand 102. Team stat discrepancies, because it was such a close game, really it came down to turnovers. Melbourne had 10, New Zealand had 19, plus 9. It's not good. Top performers, DJ Kennedy for Melbourne, 23 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists. Mitch McCarron, 25 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. And then Sean Long had 28 points, 15 rebounds, and 6 assists. Great looking stat line on paper. Overtime was not so great to him. We'll talk about that in a second. Shea Ely, 18 points, 5 assists. Key points here, overtime. So I watched overtime intently because as much as it was important to see how New Zealand got back into this game, I wanted to see how they lost it or how Melbourne won it. And what is good to say, it was a bit of both. Predominantly Melbourne taking the game by the balls and winning it, but also New Zealand kind of falling over themselves a bit. So in overtime, you always look to your best player. You see what they're going to do. Casper Ware for Melbourne had 8 points. And one to start overtime. And if you know anything about overtime, the first team to score wins like 76% of the time or something like that. He had an assist. He had a steal. That steal came off Sean Long. Sean Long had a point. He was 0-1 from the field. He went 1-4 from the foul line. At one point, missing both, giving away cheeseburgers in OT. And then a really bad turnover off a defensive rebound that he seemingly just threw straight into Casper Ware, who stole it and came down and laid it up. And that was kind of game. To miss those free throws. I must admit, after the two free throw misses, Finn Delaney caught the ball down and knocked it out of bounds and got the ball back for New Zealand. And then they committed a 5-second violation. This team is just so immature. I mean, I don't know how does that happen? How do you not get open? How do you not just give away a foul, shoving a guy in the chest to get open? I couldn't believe it when I saw it. It was unbelievable. Corey Webster hit a couple of big shots in the fourth and OT to kind of keep it close, but ultimately in OT, they fell apart. One thing I was going to say, yeah, Ty Wesley. This was an interesting choice by Kevin Braswell. Ty Wesley committed that foul on Casper Ware, and I don't know if he fouled out or not. I'll have to double-check that, but I don't think he did. He came out. He committed that foul on Ware right at the start of overtime, and came out for Finn Delaney. And I don't think Finn Delaney was really ready for this game. He had a few. He had a turnover. He had a few plays. A lot of the time, the last play of the game that went to Barlow was where he got switched onto Casper Ware onto Mitch McCarron. Switched down to Mitch McCarron and got beat off the dribble. Mitch McCarron made a pass out to Barlow, who smacked a massive three. And I wanted to talk about that three because that must have felt amazing. Mitch McCarron must have felt good when he turned the corner and you can tell you're getting by the guy. And then he gets by him. He makes the easy pass to Barlow, who's wide open because Sean Long, his defender, has had to step in front of Mitch McCarron. And he hits the three in overtime. Hitting any three in overtime must feel great. But to hit it at the late in an OT to end a team's season. He hit it. This game, they needed this game to keep a sniff of the playoffs, and he snuffed it, and he hit it in front of the New Zealand Breakers bench. He seemed to take it in stride, Barlow. He was a real professional. He didn't turn around. I don't know if I'd hit that shot. I would have been in Kevin Braswell first of all, and then I would have been at Ty Wesley, who'd been taken out of the game, and I would have said, It didn't feel so good. Because they would have been putting him off, I'm sure. Oh, must have felt great. So, Dave Barlow, good on you. Melbourne, stay alive at home. 111 to 102. But, you know, a bit of an applause to Corey Webster, who hit a big three to pretty much send it into OT. It wasn't a great play. He got a down screen from Long, came to the top, couldn't really get open. Little shimmy, little cut. Got a handoff from Shaley and just hit a massive contested three from about quarter court. So good on him. Next game of the round was Illawarra at home. They are 11-13 coming to this game. Cairns 4-20. I'm going to do this real quick. I didn't watch this one either. In score, Illawarra 110, Cairns 95. Third quarter was where it happened for Illawarra. They outscored Cairns. They doubled their score, 28-14 in that quarter. And the rest was just kind of par for the course. Top performers. Illawarra did it by committee. Seven players in double figures. And Jordan Jett with 9, but, you know, Tim Conrad had a 13, Greeter had 11, Ogilvy had 12, Blanchfield 13, Brian Conklin 16, Cedric Jackson 13, and then White had 11, and Jordan Jett had 9, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, yeah, practically 8 guys in double figures. And then for Cairns, it was DJ Newball. He had 20 points, 50% for the field, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal. Miller Trimble feel bad again, saying he had a bad game, but, you know, 35 minutes, 13 points, 11 assists, 31% from the field, 5 turnovers. So, you know, probably had a hard time against Cedric Jackson. I only saw the highlights. But, you know, 11 assists for him is a nice little game. Good to see you sharing the ball. No Nate Jawa in this game. Was sitting it out due to knee tightness, is what Mike Kelly said in the press conference, saying they're not going to push him. They're going to rest him and not take any chances, but apparently he'll be back next round. Biggest stat discrepancies, field goal percentages. Illawarra shot nearly 60% from the field. Cairns, 44. Free throw attempts. Illawarra went to the line for 19 of 23 shots. Cairns only went to the line 14 times and hit 9. So plus 10 points from the line for Illawarra and plus 9 attempts. Steals. Illawarra would double with 8-4. And then points in the paint again. Illawarra just seemed to be able to get it in there. 50-32 helps when there's no Nate Jawa, so hopefully he improves. Guys, that was round 16. Really good round of basketball, especially that first Friday night. If you didn't buy a ticket to any games last week, buy it this week, especially if you live in Perth. Fantastic crowd, but Melbourne as well. You know, the NBL's heating up, and there's such... if you can separate Melbourne, Perth, and Sydney, you're seeing something I'm not, and that sounds like real hyperbole, but it's not. I think Melbourne are the best form team, and I think they're the favourites to win the thing, but Sydney play like they did against Brisbane, they're going to really shake up Melbourne. I worry about the DJ Kennedy Newley matchup. I don't really worry about Boone and Bogut. I actually think Bogut is going to step up and play well. And then Jerome Randall and Casper and Cotton, if you go over to Perth. I mean, Perth I worry about against Melbourne because I think Josh Boone is going to beast that series. I don't think they've got anyone who can stop him. And I think DJ Kennedy is too much for Nick Kay. But then Casper Ware versus Cotton. Oh, what a matchup. Just shows you, I mean, those three teams all have American point guards. Point guards, guards, whatever. Casper, Bryce, and Jerome Randall. You know, it shows you something about the point guard crop coming out of the USA at the minute. Anyway, moving on. Let's look at round 17. Time for Ladder Watch. Whoa, you hear that? Top of the ladder is Melbourne United, 16-8 with a percentage of 1.05. I'm not even going to bother with percentages. The ones that are appropriate, I'll say it for. Number two is the Wildcats, 16-9. Three is the Kings, 16-9. Wildcats got a better percentage, 107, as opposed to the Kings, 102. Fourth spot for the minute is the Adelaide 36ers, 13-12 with a 1.00 percentage. And then the Brisbane Bullets, 12-13 in fifth place, 1.01. Slightly better percentage, but they're down in wins. So, you know, that means you're fifth. Illawarra Hawks, they're still a sniff. They're 12-13. They have to have a couple of good things go their way. Tabulate their schedule for the rest of the season. I'll have to do it on Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod. Seventh place is the Breakers, 10-14. They're out of it at this point, and of course Cairns are long out of it, 4-21. Looking at the games for round 17, I'll give you my picks. New Zealand at home against Adelaide. New Zealand are actually the favourite in this game, $1.61 according to sportsbet.com.au. Adelaide at $2.20. That's on Thursday night at 5:20 Eastern Standard Time. I think Adelaide are going to win that game. I think New Zealand don't have a lot to play for, and I don't think they're going to. I don't think they play defense, and Adelaide are going to shoot a lot of threes and win. Next game is also on Thursday night at 7:50 p.m. It's Brisbane at home against Illawarra. I think Brisbane are going to win that game, bounce back against an easier opponent. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Illawarra win. They're a smart team, and they've got a lot to play for. Now we go to Friday. Friday night at 7:50. I'll be at this game, I think. Sydney play Melbourne at home. Sydney are not the favourites. $2 to Melbourne's $1.72. I mean, Melbourne are the at this minute the better team, but I'm tipping Sydney at home. I'm going to do it. That's the only game on Friday. You got to see that game. That's one of my games of the week. On Saturday at 2:50 on Go, we've got Cairns hosting Brisbane. I think Brisbane are going to win that game, naturally. After that game at 7:50, you've got Illawarra hosting New Zealand. I've got Illawarra in that game. They are the favourites at $1.61. Sunday, 2:50, again on Go. Adelaide host Melbourne. Adelaide are not the favourites. They're $2. Melbourne, $1.72. Melbourne don't lose that game, especially if I'm tipping them to lose to Sydney. I don't think they lose that game. They're coming off a back-to-back, though. Adelaide have come from New Zealand all the way back to Adelaide. Ooh. I mean, that's a game of the round. I'm tipping Melbourne, but geez, twist my arm. Next is another game of the round. It's Perth hosting Sydney in Perth. Sunday, 5:20 p.m. That's Eastern Standard Time. Sorry, Perth people. That'd be 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Perth, something like that. Perth are the favourites, $1.61 to Sydney's $2.20. I'm picking Perth. I think it's just a little bit too far to go for Sydney. They've already locked in playoffs. They may even try to strategically lose it, depending on standing, so they don't have to play United straight up. Toughie. But no, I'm taking Perth. I think they're good. I'm really interested to see what Sydney are going to do about defence on Bryce Cotton. Are they going to put Lish on him? More than likely. Who knows? But they're my picks. Adelaide, Brisbane, Sydney, Brisbane, Illawarra, Melbourne and Perth. If you follow that 7-game multi on sportsbet.com.au, you could win $49.82. You put on a buck, you win $50 back almost. That's a nice pair of alligator shoes, isn't it? Lead news, let's look around. Not a huge amount of news. I said it before, Nate Jawa sat out the last game. He's coming back. So he'll be there against, who are they playing? Brisbane on Saturday. Mitch Creek, former Adelaide 36er, signed that first 10-day contract with the Brooklyn Nets. He's now signed a second. He signed that on February 3rd, so that runs through to February 13. In that time, Brooklyn play Milwaukee at home, Denver at home, Chicago at home, and then on the road to Canada, and they play Toronto. What I've heard of that is, well, the first game was played earlier today, in which Brooklyn played Milwaukee. They lost. Bucks 113, Nets 94. You look at the stats, though. He had himself a decent little game. He played 15 minutes, 3 of 5 from the field, grabbed 4 offensive rebounds, 5 total rebounds, 4 assists, 8 points, plus minus a plus 2. So, you know, had a decent look at the game and seemed to play pretty well. Did better than Hollis Jefferson. And Damari Carroll. Damari Carroll's 2 of 11 against this former team. Yikes. But, you know, decent showing from him, and all he's got to do is make 12 spots. A 13 now, I think. So fingers crossed that he can do it. So decent showing in this one. They did lose, though, by quite a lot. So they're looking at him. You know, you look at Brooklyn's injuries. They've got Joe Harris. He's expected to come back on February 6th. Alan Crabb's out till February 6th as well. Caris LeVert is the guy they think might come back before the All-Star game, which I believe is sort of mid-Feb. He's expected to come back February 13th. Jared Dudley's out till February 6th. It's funny how all these guys are getting better at that time. And then the big one is Spencer Dinwiddie, who's out until February 21st. Point guard, but, you know, still plays that guard position like Mitch Creek. So the question is, after February 13 and after these games, will Brooklyn re-sign him to the rest of the regular season? They cannot sign him to another 10-day.
He only get two, and they've used them concurrently, so he's going to have to either be for the rest of the year or he's back to South Melbourne. You know, fingers crossed. It could go either way. I think he's done enough to probably earn a spot, but he's got to play well in those last couple of games. Moving on. Before I talk about the NBL awards season that's coming up, I want to talk about the fourth spot. So really it's out of two teams because I don't think Illawarra are going to do it. They could though, but as I said, I'll talk about that more on Twitter. But you look at Adelaide and Brisbane. So Adelaide's schedule is as follows. They're at New Zealand, and then they host Melbourne in this round, and then they're at Perth in their final round. So they're conceivably three losses. Let's say they go 1-2, which is a safe estimate. Brisbane, on the other hand, have a pretty easy run. They play Illawarra at home, Cairns at Cairns in this round, and then they host New Zealand next round. So, I mean, the way Brisbane played against Sydney and have done all year and have lost to Cairns in the past by lots, they could totally drop the bundle and Adelaide get in because Adelaide, you know, are capable of beating either Melbourne or Perth. I don't think both, but really, really tight. I'll be talking about that more on Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod if you want to listen. Let's look at the awards now. So obviously they've released the names that are going to be MVP and Defensive Player of the Year and things like that. I'll bring that up and we'll have a look. Oh, I've just gone to have a look at the NBL award nominations and it appears as though that Ramon Moore is going to return for the Adelaide 36ers. Just released today at noon. He'll be in the game on Thursday night against the Breakers. That's a big boost for them. Hopefully he's healthy and can contribute. But Ramon Moore is back. Let's look at the nominees for the NBL awards. So obviously Bogut is your headliner for MVP. If we go down to the list, I mean, here are the nominees for the MVP. Andrew Bogut, Brian Conklin, Bryce Cotton, Cam Glidden, Casper Ware, Daniel Johnson. Really, this award is out of a couple of players for me. I think Andrew Bogut is the favorite. I think Bryce Cotton and Casper Ware are the next two. I don't think anyone else is really in contention. Lamar Patterson, if he had a bit more time, maybe. But he just hasn't played enough, or well enough, to be honest. He's played really well, but Bogut's just been better, I think. On both ends, like his offensive game is not as good as some of these guys, but the real contention is Casper Ware. I love Bryce Cotton so much. I think he's the best player in the NBL. But he did miss time with the hand. Maybe out of those two. Coach of the year, you would have thought it's Dean Vickerman. He's done a really good job. I mean, the outside chance is maybe Rob Beveridge. You look at that roster and it's not great, and that's, if they make fourth spot, he's a real chance, but yeah, that's a long shot too. Sixth man of the year, you've got Harry Froling, Jared Weeks, Jordair Jett, Kyle Adnam, Mitch Norton, Ruben Tarangi. I mean, for me, it's probably Jordair Jett, maybe Harry Froling. Kyle Adnam's, I think, been okay, but hasn't played well enough late in the season. Tarangi, actually. I think it's out of Jordair Jett or Tarangi, to be honest. I'd be leaning towards Tarangi. Defensive Player of the Year, I think, is most definitely Andrew Bogut. Most definitely. Kevin Lish should be number two. The way he's played on Cam Glidden and everyone else, especially Cam Glidden, though. Most Improved, you've got Anthony Drimmick, David Barlow, Jared Weeks, Kyle Adnam, Matt Hodgson, Nicholas Kay, Ruben Tarangi, Todd Blanchfield. I think in this one, your considerations are David Barlow is probably my pick. Nick Kay, maybe. Blanchfield, possibly. He didn't have a great year with Sydney, and now he's had a pretty good season with Illawarra. Rookie of the Year, first year of a professional contract, you've got Brian Bowen, Daniel Greeter, Danger Kuth, Emmett Nair, Harry Froling, Jack McVeigh, Marshall Nelson, Reese Vague, and Will Magnay. I think that would go to Harry Froling. But, you know, Jack McVeigh's making a late case. But, no, I think Harry Froling's had some pretty good games, as is Brian Bowen. Like, he's been inconsistent, I will agree, but that's Rookie of the Year, isn't it? Guys, that's going to do it. As I said, on Twitter, we're going to have a look at Illawarra making the finals. I don't think they're going to do it. If I was a betting man, I don't care what the odds are, I wouldn't go with it, but it's possible, and this is the NBL. Anything can happen. You can see incredible, and you can hear incredible in the timeouts. Sometimes you hear a bit more than you wanted to.
Guys, this round is some great games. That Sydney-Melbourne game, that Adelaide-Melbourne game, Perth-Sydney. You got some great rounds, great games to go to. Go and buy a ticket. You know, take anyone, take your boss, take your people you work with, take your secretary, take a cousin, take your monkey's uncle, take your sister or your mother, you know. Because, of course, if you don't, hell, I will. That's the NBL Pocket Podcast. Join me on Twitter anytime at NBL Pocket Pod, P-O-D. Couldn't fit in podcast. Facebook, iTunes, whatever. Thanks, guys. Bye.